We'll go to question time. Senator Cash.
Thank you.
Senator Cash. Too quick. Senator Wong.
I seek leave to make a statement concerning ministerial arrangements.
Is leave granted?
I advise of changes to ministerial arrangements. Senator Farrell will be absent from question time this week on account of ministerial business overseas. I know that that is going to be hard to hear, Senator Birmingham. they actually groaned. In his absence, ministers will represent portfolios at question time in accordance with the letter circulated to the President and party leaders and independent senators.
Thank you, Minister Wong. Senator Cash.
Thank you very much. My question is to the Minister representing the Prime Minister, Senator Wong. Today, the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs confirmed 80 asylum seekers being held in immigration detention were released almost immediately following last week's High Court ruling. The Minister has said there will be strict conditions attached to the new visas that have been issued. What are these conditions and what are the consequences for an individual who violates these visa conditions?
Thank you, Senator Cash. Minister Wong.
Thank you, President. Thank you to Senator Cash. As I said yesterday, and as we said last week, we will use all available powers to keep the community safe, and the government will also consider all legislative and regulatory options. As you would know, Senator Cash, and through you, President, last week the High Court handed down a decision which required the release of an individual from immigration detention. Whilst the Commonwealth argued against this, obviously the High Court has made a different decision, and we have prepared for this outcome given the case's significance. And community safety is the number one priority throughout this process. The AFP, I can advise the Chamber that the Australian Federal Police and Australian Border Force are working closely with state and territory authorities, and that a joint operation was established on Friday. I'm also advised that visas were issued to impacted individuals with strong mandatory conditions to ensure community safety is upheld. I would again emphasise, as a decision of the High Court of Australia, the government is bound to implement it. I'm asked about conditions. I'm advised that these include, for example, requirements to report regularly to the Department of Home Affairs, to inform the Minister of changes to personal details, including address and social media profiles, restrictions on industries of employment, and a range of other strict conditions. The government will continue to consider that all measures that may be available. The government will continue to consider all measures that may be available to strengthen the protection of the community in this case. I also can indicate a number of other people, around 90, have so far been assessed as being in similar circumstances to the original plaintiff.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Cash, first supplementary.
Thank you. And what types of offences were the 80 individuals released into the community convicted of?
Minister Wong.
Obviously, the Shadow Minister was a minister in the government which put in place the form of the arrangements for detention, which the High Court has now found to be unconstitutional, and I assume she would be familiar through that process of agreed. It is a 20-year precedent. She would be aware of some of the offences of those who are in this position. Again, as I say, the government does not have a choice as to whether or not we release these individuals. These individuals are required to be released as a consequence of the High Court of Australia's
Minister Wong,
judgment.
Please resume your seat. Senator Cash.
Thank you. Look, and it is a point of order in relation to relevance. I did specifically ask what type of offences the 80 individuals released into the community were convicted of.
The minister is being relevant to the question. Minister, did you have anything further to add?
I am advised, and I will check this, that not all individuals have been convicted, but if there is further information I can provide, I will do so.
Senator Cash, second supplementary.
Thank you. And has the government consulted the communities into which these individuals have been released?
Thank you, Senator Cash. Minister Wong.
Again, I would make the point to Senator Cash that any government, even a government that even the government she was part of, would be required to follow the High Court's ruling. And I think I'm sorry, Senator. Would you like to say something?
Senator Henderson. Oh. Senator Henderson.
Any government, including a government such as those opposite we're part of, is bound to follow the High Court, we are doing so, and we are seeking to
Minister
do so.
Minister Wong, please resume your seat. Senator Cash.
Again, a point of order in relation to relevance. With all due respect, I didn't ask about the High Court decision. I asked whether or not the government consulted the communities into which these individuals have been released.
I'll remind the senator of your question. Thank you, Senator Cash.
Your question, people are being released because of a High Court decision. So I would again make the point, and I understand that the Shadow Minister wants to make a political point with this. This is a very difficult situation that the government is seeking to deal with.
Minister Wong, please resume your seat. Senator Cash.
Well, again, a point of order in relation to relevance. Again, with all due respect, I didn't ask about the High Court decision. I asked whether or not, if it's a yes or no, did the government consult the communities into which these 80 people have been released?
Thank you, Senator Cash. The minister is being relevant to the question. Minister Wong.
I would again make the point. I'll make two points, and you might wish to ignore the High Court decision, but that is why this is occurring, Senator. You might wish to ignore it.
Time, thank you, Minister. Senator Payman.
My question is to Minister representing the Treasurer, Senator Gallagher. How is the government's economic management underpinning resilience in the Australian economy in the face of global uncertainties? And can the minister outline how the government's policies are contributing to the robust employment and wages growth, significant private and public investment, and ensuring Australia's economy remains resilient amidst the uncertain global outlook, and how this works to support Australians feeling the pressure from cost of living?
Thank you, Senator Payman. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you, President. I thank Senator Payman for the question, an important question that she asked today. And in these globally challenging times, our fiscal management is acting as pressure against the inflation challenge we see across the economy. Fitch, the international ratings agencies, has recently reaffirmed Australia's AAA credit rating, underscoring the strength of our fiscal strategy. And this is not just a tick of approval, and it's an endorsement of our budget approach that balances the need of the present, including cost of living measures to provide relief to Australian families, with our long-term economic ambitions. On this side, we understand that Australians are doing it tough, and that is why we acted with that significant cost of living package across the October and May budget. The latest figures from the ABS demonstrate that our cost of living policies have already trimmed the CPI by half a percentage point in the last quarter alone. The contrast is clear. We have a plan and we are delivering on that plan. Those opposite have done just one thing. They've opposed cost of living relief for Australians at every turn. When we look at examples of the benefits of those opposite who have appeared to have collective amnesia, Mr Dutton and the Coalition have opposed cheaper energy, they've opposed cheaper medicines, they've opposed more Medicare bulk billing, they've opposed fee-free TAFE, opposed more affordable housing, opposed the expansion of paid parental leave, and they have always opposed getting wages moving again.
Yep.
The opposition are confused about even the most basic principles of economic management. For example, I know you don't like this, for example, the Shadow Treasurer in the AFR on July 21, 2022 said, with inflation rising in Australia and around the world, it's time to restore the budget to a more sustainable footing, but then went on to argue that Labor should spend more money on subsidising fuel,
a
massive increase in defence spending.
Senator Payman, first supplementary.
Thank you, Minister, and you're right. The opposition are good at opposing every good reform out there. With the cost With the cost of living impacting households across the nation, can the minister detail how the Albanese government's policies, such as the energy rebate and the Housing Australia Future Fund, are directly providing relief to Australians, and whether these measures have been recognised by any independent bodies as contributing to a reduction in inflation?
Thank you, Senator Payman. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you, President. I thank Senator Payman for the supplementary and for her focus on providing relief to Australians at this time. The government fully appreciates that every dollar counts for Australian families, and we can and have confirmed that independent analysis has affirmed that cost of living measures of our government are delivering for Australians and also assisting with the moderation in inflation as a direct result of our interventions. This shows our budget strategy is right for the time and right for the challenges that we confront, and is helping to support Australia through these difficult times. Through initiatives like our changes to bulk billing and cheaper medicines, we're providing immediate relief when it's most needed, but we're also making long-term investments that will provide social dividends. Moreover, our Housing Australia Future Fund is investing in more than just bricks and mortar. It's investing in the future of Australian communities by planning for 30,000 new social and affordable homes. And our Rewiring the Nation plan isn't just about adding more cheaper electricity generation available.
Senator Payman, second supplementary.
Thank you, Minister. In addressing the current cost of living and inflation pressures, could the minister update the Senate on the outcomes of the government's initiatives, such as the recent expansion of the Medicare bulk billing incentives and the reduction in medicine costs, and how these are benefiting Australian families, pensioners and concession card holders?
Thank you, Senator Payman. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you, and I thank Senator Payman for focusing on those cost of living measures that are so important for Australian households. The expansion of Medicare bulk billing incentives is the concrete example of our commitment ensuring that pensioners, families and concession card holders can see their GP without the stress of additional costs. And that's because we're not just seeking to ease inflation pressures, it's also because we believe in Medicare. We believe in Medicare and the fact that Australians need to be able to access health care, both accessible and affordable health care. And our commitment isn't just helping Australians see the GP. The reduction in medicines prices is another critical cost of living relief measure that is directly benefiting millions of Australians. And it's a sharp departure from the track record of those opposites whose policies often left the most vulnerable behind. Our government is dedicated to a fair go for all, especially during these tough times.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Patterson.
Thank you, Madam President. My question is to the Minister representing the Prime Minister, Senator Wong. On Friday night, the Jewish Shabbat, pro-Palestinian protests turned violent and forced the Jewish congregants at a nearby synagogue to return home for their own safety. The Jewish Community Council of Victoria said the violent incident, quote, impacted on Jewish life in Melbourne, created a heightened sense of fear and anxiety in our community. On Saturday, a pro-Palestinian motorcade deliberately drove through Sydney's eastern suburbs in actions that cannot be interpreted in any way other than to intimidate Australia's Jewish community. Has the Prime Minister spoken with representatives of the Jewish community since these incidents? And what actions has the Albanese government taken since Friday night to better ensure the safety of Jewish Australians?
Thank you, Senator Patterson. Minister Wong.
Can I first say that I thought that the actions or the events that we saw in Caulfield were utterly unacceptable. And I would say that they must not be repeated. And I was also concerned about some of the footage of the events in the eastern suburbs of Sydney that you reference. In relation to what occurred in Caulfield, I think we know, and you have seen that I've said this publicly, Senator, that a protest near a synagogue was not the right thing to do. And it shouldn't be repeated, and the organisers have apologised, which is the right thing to do. I again want to reaffirm publicly, and you asked what we've done, and I will repeat what I've said publicly, including yesterday. The Jewish community in this country has a right to feel safe and to be safe. All Australians have a right to feel safe and to be safe. And no one in this country should be fearful because of who they are or the faith they practice. We have been very clear, including in this chamber, there is no place for prejudice, hateful prejudice in our society. There is no place for anti-Semitism, there is no place for racism, and there is no place for Islamophobia. I would say I understand how those events have been extremely difficult for members of the Jewish community. I understand how distressing the current conflict is for a lot of Australians. And I reiterate what I said yesterday. Let us not let distress turn to division.
Thank you, Minister. The time for answering has expired. Senator Patterson, first supplementary.
Thank you, Madam President. Australia's Jewish community has expressed concern about the attempt by the Albanese government to link these violent scenes to Islamophobia. Does the government unequivocally condemn the targeting of Jewish Australians witnessed in both Melbourne and Sydney, and in the rise in anti-Semitic behaviour being witnessed across Australia?
Thank you, Senator Patterson. Minister.
I'm not sure what you mean by the suggestion link. I mean, I think we take a consistent position, and I think you know me well enough, Senator Patterson. I take a consistent position where I stand and the government stands against all prejudice and all racism. That was a particularly upsetting, frightening event. I think that the organisers apologising is the right thing to do. But I will never make I won't make an apology for always standing against all forms of prejudice and racism. We should. We should be clear. In this country, no one should feel fearful because they are a member of the Jewish community and they practice the Jewish faith. No one should be fearful because they are practicing Muslim. No one should be fearful because they are an Aboriginal Australian or an Asian. I mean,
Thank you, Minister. The time for answering has expired. Senator Patterson, second supplementary.
Thank you, Madam President. While appropriately standing against hate crimes or acts of any sort, will the government undertake not to draw false equivalences in the future and to unequivocally condemn anti-Semitism when it occurs, as it should unequivocally condemn any other hate crime or act when it occurs?
Minister Wong.
I have unequivocally condemned anti-Semitism in this role and in every role I have ever held,
exactly.
Just as I condemn Islamophobia and all racism. You use those words. I say it's moral consistency. Moral consistency, and that is what we will continue to demonstrate.
Senator Steele-John.
Thank you, President. My question is to the Foreign Minister, Senator Wong. Over 11,000 civilians have been killed in the bombing and invasion of Gaza, including 4,000 children. The government said it's concerned by the number of deaths, but clearly not enough to stop backing the invasion. It has been shared with me that the so-called humanitarian pauses are not allowing ambulances to collect victims and are calling on the government to stop using the offensive language of humanitarian pause when there is no such thing in place. These so-called corridors cover one section of the Gaza Strip, but the streets around them are being described to me as killing fields. Foreign Minister, how many more children and innocent civilians must die before Labour will join France and the rest of the world in calling for a ceasefire?
Thank you, Senator Steele-John. Minister Wong.
Senator Steele-John, as the Government of Australia, we seek to walk a path which reflects Australia's interests, which reflects our principal position and our views. This government, this country, has a long-standing position of recognising and supporting the right of the State of Israel to exist. I appreciate that may not be your view, but that is our view.
Order.
But
Order.
Senator, if you want the opportunity to reflect that, I'm reflecting on the vote on the motion that you voted against. You voted against
order.
A motion. I would also say this. We have also taken the view that international humanitarian law is a set of legal principles that Australia supports. And we make no apology for articulating the importance of the application of international humanitarian law. And you have heard me say that from day one. frankly, some people have been critical of that. But I think it's a principle that Australia should always cleave to, that we call for protection of civilians and the observance of international humanitarian law. In fact, the motion that was passed by most in this chamber called for that. In relation to humanitarian pauses, I'd refer you to my comments yesterday, which is they are an important and necessary first step, but I acknowledged they are not enough. And of course, the international community, regardless of our perspective on the Middle East, would want to
see. Thank you, Minister. Senator Steele-John, first supplementary.
Thank you, President. Minister, it has been shared with me that mothers, such as the mother of three, Suhar, have been waiting as long as 36 hours for an ambulance. In this case, that mother's 10-year-old child, murdered by IDF forces, is decomposing in her house, where her other three children wait with her. Minister, are you aware that people are dying on the way to these so-called safe corridors and that ambulances are unable to retrieve dead bodies from the houses of family
members? Senator Steele-John, it's time. Minister.
Senator, I am aware, and we are all aware, that there is a humanitarian catastrophe in Gaza. I've said that.
Order.
Well, I'll take the interjection from Senator Shoebridge. So I just would remind you, we are not a party to this conflict. Right? Well, our role as
Senator Shoebridge. Senator Shoebridge, this is Senator Steele-John's question. The minister is answering. I ask you to listen in respectful silence, Minister.
We will continue to articulate a principal position. We have done so all the way through. We recognise that what occurred on October 7th was horrific. We recognise that Hamas is an organisation which is dedicated to the destruction of the State of Israel. We recognise that they are still holding hostages. Similarly, we recognise that Israel's right, in affirming Israel's right to defend itself, we also emphasise the importance of international law.
Thank you, Minister. The time for answering has expired. Senator Steele-John, second supplementary.
Thank you, President. Minister, on Sunday on Insiders, you said, and I quote, "We call on Israel to cease attacking of hospitals." Now that the government has finally recognised the reality that the State of Israel is in flagrant violation of international law and is not respecting the sanctity of medical facilities, will you finally call out these actions as the war crimes that they are?
Thank you, Senator Steele-John. Minister.
As I said yesterday, under international law, hospitals, patients, medical facilities and medical practitioners have certain protections. Well, you may decide that you want to make those sorts of assertions. That is not the role of the Australian Foreign Minister, and I don't propose to.
Order. Minister, please continue.
I would have thought some of the events that we've seen might lead you to a slightly more moderate tone, Senator. Seriously.
Order
in
across
Australia.
The chamber.
In Australia. Well,
Minister, please resume your seat. Minister, please resume your seat. Senator Steele-John, you've asked your question. The minister is answering. I will again say, please, Senator Steele-John, you're not in an argument with me or a debate. I'm calling for respectful silence. Minister, please continue.
Thank you, President. I articulated the government's position yesterday in an interview, and I expressed the view about the position of medical facilities and patients and hospitals and the importance of international law being observed.
Thank you, Minister. The time for answering has expired. Senator Stewart.
Thank you, President. My question is to the Minister for Foreign Affairs, Senator Wong. Last week, the Prime Minister attended the Pacific Island Forum Leaders Retreat and announced a new partnership with Tuvalu.
Can the Minister explain how this new partnership with Tuvalu is in our national interests?
Minister Wong.
Thank you, and I thank Senator Stewart for her question. And it is the case that last week the Prime Minister and Prime Minister Netanyahu of Tuvalu announced a major new bilateral agreement in response to a request from Tuvalu, the Australia-Tuvalu-Falapili Union. The union comprises a bilateral treaty between Tuvalu and Australia, as well as a commitment to elevate our broader partnership. What I would say to the Chamber is this represents the most important step any Australian government has taken with a Pacific country since the independence of Papua New Guinea in 1975. Tuvalu's remote location, its scarce natural resources and small population spread across low-lying islands means it faces major challenges for development and major climate risks. Our governments have been working for months to secure this treaty, which elevates our partnership to one that is our most advanced, our most integrated and our most comprehensive. Falapili is a Tuvaluan word for the traditional values of good neighbourliness, care and mutual respect. And the treaty covers three main areas of cooperation: climate change, security and human mobility with dignity. Under the treaty, Australia commits to provide assistance to Tuvalu in response to a major natural disaster, to health pandemics and to military aggression at its request. For this security guarantee to function, Australia and Tuvalu must mutually agree on any of Tuvalu's security arrangements. And Australia will establish a dedicated permanent intake, a special mobility pathway to allow a capped number of Tuvaluans to come to Australia to live, work and study. This will enable what Prime Minister Netanyahu described to me as migration with dignity, human mobility with dignity. And this, in this way, their government is safeguarding the future of their people, its islands and their culture.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Stewart, first supplementary.
Thank you, Minister, for that update. Can the Minister please explain how the Australian Tuvalu Falapili Union will contribute to a peaceful, stable and prosperous Pacific region?
Minister.
This Falapili Union gives effect to the concept of Pacific-led security. Both of our countries are strengthening our commitment to each other in response to the challenges of our time, including climate change and strategic competition. Australia believes in Pacific sovereignty, where the region is guided by the Pacific Islands Forum and the 2050 Strategy for the Blue Pacific, a region where we come together in the Pacific way and where we are stronger together, where the Pacific family decides its own security and is equipped to respond to its own needs. We know being part of the Pacific family means we have a duty to respond to Pacific needs and to deliver for our shared interests. We are seeking to do so, and this Falapili Union represents a major step towards deeper regional integration so that the countries of the Pacific can safeguard their sovereignty and determine their own destiny.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Stewart, second supplementary.
Thank you, Minister. Can the Minister explain how Australia is supporting the Tuvalu deal with the threat of climate change under the Australian Tuvalu Falapili Union?
Thank you, Senator Stewart. Minister.
Well, as I referenced in my earlier answer, it is a decision of the Pacific Island Forum by leaders that articulates the importance of Pacific family being responsible for its own security. And what I would say is we also believe that that is in Australia's interest. So it's in the interests of the Pacific and in the interests of Australia. It's not possible to talk about security in the Pacific without talking about what the forum itself has determined to be Pacific Island nations' biggest security challenge, and that, of course, is climate change. As part of our Falapili Union, we will provide an additional $16.9 million in funding towards large-scale land reclamation that will expand Funafuti's land by 6%, enabling people to live in Tuvalu in the face of sea level rise. I notice over the weekend that Mr. Hastie has indicated that the opposition is supportive of this arrangement, given their opposition to
Thank
so much
Minister.
Else. I'm pleased that
Senator Roberts. Minister, the time for answering has expired. I have Senator Roberts on his feet. Senator Roberts.
Thank you, President. My question is to the Minister representing the Treasurer, Senator Gallagher. Australian Bureau of Statistics data and Reserve Bank data for the June quarter reveals Australians' spending fell while new arrival spending increased, because the number of new arrivals increased. Minister, the government's policy of bringing in so many new arrivals to shore up domestic demand is acting against the Reserve Bank's low inflation strategy. Why do you have your foot on the accelerator while the Reserve Bank has its foot on the brake?
Thank you, Senator Roberts. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you, and I thank thank you, President. I thank Senator Roberts for the question. I disagree with it, and I don't accept that we are not working alongside the Reserve Bank. They have their job to do, which is to bring inflation back within the target band without crunching the economy, and we have our job to do, which is to implement our economic plan, which is to roll out, as I said before, the cost of living relief, to get the budget in much better shape, which we have done, and to make much overdue investments into energy, skills and housing across the country, which is causing pressure in other areas of the economy. In terms of the population growth, or what we've been seeing from the net overseas migration numbers in particular, as we have spoken about in this place on a number of times, is we are seeing some of the results of having our borders closed, essentially, for a couple of years. So we're seeing people return to this country, particularly international students, to study at a time when we're not seeing as many leave the country. So we are seeing that, and that's reflected in the budget numbers. But I can absolutely guarantee, Senator Roberts, that we are working with the Reserve Bank. The decisions that we take are about not making their job harder. It's an already difficult job that they are doing, and our job is to support that in the areas that we have responsibility for, which is to, as I said, deal with that cost of living relief, to get the budget in much better shape, which we have done, and to invest in the productive side of our economy, so into things like the energy transition, into skills and into housing, which are areas that were left neglected after a decade of the—
Senator Roberts, first supplementary.
Thank you, President. Australian Bureau of Statistics data shows new private house commencements fell 6.6% and new private apartment commencements fell 19.6% in the June quarter. Minister, in line with the Reserve Bank's 13 interest rate rises, housing construction is falling. When you need to build more homes for all the Albanese government arrivals, what are you going to do? Pump up the economy with more arrivals, causing more inflation and more interest rate rises, or accept you made a mistake and put the brakes on new arrivals?
Thank you, Senator Roberts. Minister Gallagher.
Well, thank you. And I would just say that we have not changed the policy settings that were in place around net overseas migration. Okay, so what we are seeing, so your characterisation there is incorrect. In response to some of the economic data you cite, yes, we are seeing moderation in a couple of areas, and that is because many Australians are doing it tough right now. And and actually what the Reserve Bank is doing is to try and lower demand with some of the decisions that they've been taking. And so, yes, we are seeing that translate into other areas of economic data. But I would also say to the senator that voted against the Housing Australia Future Fund that our housing policies are about dealing with this long-term underinvestment and failure to acknowledge that the Commonwealth Government has a role to support the construction and delivery of social and affordable housing.
That's right.
That is the area where the Commonwealth has neglected it in the previous decade. We have a range of policies targeted to housing to address—
Senator Roberts, second supplementary.
Thank you, President. Talking misinformation about your housing bill won't save this government. Everyday Australians know they can't afford their rent or mortgage, and they know your government is swamping the country with even more arrivals. Minister, why are you papering over your economic mismanagement running an immigration Ponzi scheme?
Thank you, Senator Roberts. Minister Gallagher.
Well, you know, that question is just simply incorrect. I would say that there is a huge amount of work that's been going on by the Home Affairs Minister and the Immigration Minister to work to fix the broken system that we inherited, and we'll have more to say on that shortly, as that work that they are doing is finalised, but it's simply not true to allege what you are alleging. We have inherited a migration system that the Minister herself has said is broken. So we are dealing with issues to fix that. But in relation to some of the numbers that we have been seeing, particularly in relation to international students and working holiday makers who have returned to the country with valid visas, with valid visas after the borders had been closed. So let's just make sure, just because you say misinformation doesn't mean it is misinformation. Let's just say that these are the facts. Let's deal with the facts. We accept that there is pressure in the housing market, which is why are responding to deal with
Senator Birmingham.
Thank you, President. President, my question is to the Minister for Foreign Affairs, Senator Wong. Minister, yesterday in relation to the war in Gaza that was caused by the vicious and deadly terrorist attacks of October 7 by Hamas against Israel, you stated that, quote, we all want to take the next steps towards a ceasefire. In contrast, US Secretary of State Antony Blinken says that, quote, a ceasefire now would simply leave Hamas in place, able to regroup and repeat what it did on October 7. And British Labor leader Keir Starmer says that, quote, a ceasefire now will only freeze this conflict and would leave hostages in Gaza and Hamas with the infrastructure and capability to carry out the sort of attack we saw on October 7. Minister, how is your statement consistent with the position of Australia's closest allies and partners?
Thank you, Senator Birmingham. Minister Wong.
Thank you very much, President. I think the Senator declined to read what I also said, but I know he pays close attention to what I say. I went on to say, this cannot be one-sided. And I pointed out that Hamas is still attacking Israel and is still holding hostages. So there is something happening today with everybody's phones. what I would say to you is that we have affirmed Israel's right to defend itself. We have consistently said that the way it does so matters. We have said that humanitarian pauses are a necessary first step, but we have stated that much more is needed. That includes the release of hostages unconditionally. That includes making sure that international law is upheld. So what I would say to the Senator is please do look at the totality of that interview, because I did seek to, in what is a very difficult set of circumstances, set out a clear set of principles about how we are approaching this. I have engaged closely with colleagues and counterparts, and you might recall, Senator, I did return from China via Tokyo, where the G7 was meeting, to ensure we continue to engage with our partners and like-minded nations.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Birmingham, first supplementary.
Thank you, President. President, Minister, with reference to your statement that no ceasefire can be one-sided, what are the types of considerations, conditions or concessions the Albanese government should be considered in any ceasefire? Would this include the release of all hostages and the unconditional surrender of Hamas leadership, terrorists and terrorist capabilities?
Thank you, Minister. Senator Birmingham. Minister Wong.
I think I went to that in my primary. I made the point that Hamas continues to attack Israel and that Hamas continues to hold hostages, many from Israel but also from other countries. And I've also previously stated, as has Senator Birmingham, that the dismantling of Hamas will be required as part of any durable peace. I think that we all know this is a very difficult, distressing conflict, and we all would like to see a just and enduring peace in which both Israelis and Palestinians can live in security behind internationally recognised borders.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Birmingham, second supplementary.
Thank you, Minister. Respected Australian Jewish community leaders Jeremy Liebler and Gillian Siegel described your reference to Israel's, quote, attacking of hospitals, end quote, as a libel against Israel. does the government accept their interpretation of Article 19 of the Geneva Convention that, quote, explicitly states that hospitals lose their protection if they are used for military purposes, and their further statement, quote, that Hamas uses Shifa and other hospitals for military purposes?
Thank you, Senator Birmingham. Minister Wong.
Senator, you might have... I know both Mr Lieber and Ms Segal, and I have a great deal of respect for both of them. You would have seen my comments on insiders, which is we recognise that the challenges that Israel faces, because Hamas, as a terrorist organisation, does operate within civilian institutions. The point I also made, though, was that does not obviate the application of international humanitarian law. And I made a different point, which I think is important here. We know what Hamas is. Hamas is a terrorist organisation. Hamas is an organisation that has a stated aim of, which is the destruction of the State of Israel. And the Hamas has shown complete contempt for international law. We are a democracy, and so too is Israel. And because of who we are, we seek higher standards and we accept higher standards. And those standards include the application of international humanitarian.
Thanks very much, President. My question is to the Minister for Foreign Affairs. In question time on Friday, you admitted that the sea dumping bill is being prioritised for the benefit of Woodside, INPEX, Santos and the Japanese and South Korean governments, who are co-investors in the Barossa gas project. Why is the Albanese government prioritising the interests of Japan and South Korea, who want to expand new fossil fuel production, and not prioritising the interests of our Pacific neighbours who want coal and gas expansion to end?
Thank you, Senator Waters. Minister.
It's interesting, isn't it, that the Greens political party ignore the discussion we just had earlier in question time about Tuvalu and the groundbreaking agreement that the Albanese government has engaged in. But you know, you make a point, Senator, about the Pacific. Well, we are actually engaging with the Pacific, and I also would make this point that you know we are a long-term energy partner, energy security partner with the countries of North Asia, and we are committed to taking ambitious climate action while maintaining that long-term partnership. We do that because it's in our interests and because it's in the interests of Australians. As you know, Australia is putting in place key policy and legislative changes to drive our transition to net zero, while also limiting the impacts of volatile global energy markets for Australians. The Senator may not agree, but the government believes it is in Australia's interests to play a key role in providing reliable and affordable clean energy and critical minerals for our Indo-Pacific partners. It is in our interest for Australia to remain a competitive global energy supplier. We know that we want to become a renewable energy super player to meet our own emissions reduction goals and supporting the stable and secure decarbonisation of economies in our region. Well, surely the Greens would support that too. Now, as in Australia, our region and trading partners also need time to adjust. Japan has set an emissions reduction target of 46% by 2030 on 2013 levels. Korea has set a target of 40% by 2030 on 2018 levels. Obviously, we do want to work with others in the region, and we do want to ensure that the partnerships that we have with Japan and Korea are
Thank you, Minister.
Continue.
The time for answering has expired. Senator Waters, first supplementary.
Thanks, President. This sea dumping bill, as well as the petroleum resource rent tax changes, have been written by and for gas companies. This has now become a very disturbing pattern of behaviour. Minister, which other countries and corporations are writing the government's legislation to facilitate which other projects?
Thank you, Senator Waters. Minister Wong.
It's always interesting, isn't it, when the Greens political party don't agree with a position, they somehow move immediately to the accusation that we're just puppets. They move immediately to that, instead of actually perhaps the possibility we just don't agree with you.
We just don't agree with you. We don't think that posturing in this chamber is going to achieve net zero. Newsflash. We don't believe that posturing in this chamber is going to achieve net zero. We actually do believe, unlike you, that Japan matters to Australia and we matter to Japan, and that is in Australia's interests, our energy interests and our security interests. We believe that Korea matters to Japan, that is in our energy interests, our economic interests and our security interests. So we don't take the same isolationist approach you do. We think we are a part of the region and we think we have to actually work for the transition. I guess we differ.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Waters, second supplementary.
Thank you, President. Can you confirm that this sea dumping bill is a diplomatic offering to appease Japan and South Korea following the amendments secured by the Greens to the safeguard mechanism that pushed up the cost of the Barossa project because of its very high carbon emissions, and in which project those two governments have a direct financial interest?
Thank you, Senator Waters. Order across the chamber, particularly on my right. Minister.
What am I supposed to do with that?
No.
Senator O'Neill. Senator O'Neill, I've called you.
Thank you very much, President. My question is to the Minister representing the Minister for Government Services, Senator Gallagher. The report into the Robodebt Royal Commission described the Liberal and Nationals government Robodebt scheme as, and I quote, a crude and cruel mechanism, neither fair nor legal, and it made many people feel like criminals. In essence, people were traumatised on the off chance they might owe money. It was a costly failure of public administration in both human and economic forms. Can the government update the Senate on the Albanese Labor government's robo-debt response?
Thank you, Senator O'Neill. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you. Thanks, President, and I thank Senator O'Neill for her question, but also for the role that she played in uncovering many of the details of that shameful and illegal scheme that was operated by the former government. Over many years, I sat and watched you at Estimates, Senator O'Neill, questioning Services Australia about what was going on. And as we now know, with the Royal Commission, we have the full details of that shameful period in public administration that turned out to be an illegal scheme operated for a number of years under a number of ministers, with the architect, of course, being Mr Scott Morrison, the former Prime Minister. Today, the Albanese government has formally responded to all 56 recommendations of the Royal Commission into the robo-debt scheme. And we have agreed or agreed in principle to all 56 of the Royal Commission's recommendations as part of the ongoing work to restore faith, integrity and trust in government. On behalf of the government and the Australian people, I thank Commissioner Holmes and her team for their dedication, professionalism and forensic work on the Royal Commission. Today's response notes the ways in which our government will work to implement the recommendations of that Royal Commission, and to support that work we are providing some extra investment and new funding to a number of different parts of government, including the Ombudsman, so in public administration, to support implementation of the Commissioner's recommendations, and this is in addition to the extra resourcing that was announced, I think, last week by for Services Australia to improve frontline service delivery. We're committed to putting people back at the centre of the work of government and to invest in better services for the Australian community. We'll continue to implement the reforms to strengthen the APS and bolster the power of oversight agencies to ensure a failure like Robodebt can never, ever happen again.
It was Thank you, Minister. Senator O'Neill, first supplementary.
Thank you very much, Minister, for that fulsome response. It was such a huge, huge scale impact on Australians. Robodebt targeted some of Australia's most economically vulnerable people. How's the Albanese government ensuring Robodebt cannot happen again, including by investing in the Australian public service?
Thank you, Senator O'Neill. Minister.
Thank you, and I thank Senator O'Neill for the question. And it is, as Senator O'Neill alludes to in her question, was such a big failure of public administration that, of course, has resulted in a $1.8 billion worth of refunds affecting 500,000 Australians, over 443,000 Australians who were hounded to repay back money that they didn't owe. And we'll never forget, will we, former ministers saying, we'll find you, we'll track you down, you'll have to repay it, and you may even end up in prison. That's what happened under this illegal scheme that affected the hundreds of thousands of Australians, their families, causing ongoing and significant harm. And that is the legacy of this government. So when they lecture us on cost of living, we always remember what they did to Australia's most neediest people who relied on social services and social security. They hounded them and they threatened them with jail, and we are addressing all of these recommendations.
Thank you, Minister. Senator O'Neill, second supplementary.
Thank you, Minister. The Albanese Labor government has recognised the hundreds of thousands of Australians who were affected by the robo-debt scheme. But what have the architects of the scheme, the coalition government, done to actually acknowledge their part in this failure of public administration?
Thank you, Senator O'Neill. Minister.
Well, not enough, that's for sure. Robo-debt didn't come out of the blue. The previous Liberal National government spent years gutting the Australian public service and putting public servants into a challenging position by eroding capability and capacity of the public service. And when the scheme's unfairness, probable illegality and cruelty became apparent at the beginning of 2017, the Royal Commission found that instead of abandoning it, the path taken by the former government was to double down, to go on the attack in the media against those who complained, and to maintain the falsehood that, in fact, the system had not changed at all. To this day, people who served as senior cabinet ministers in the former government, including the opposition leader and the shadow attorney general, continue to deny this history. We've heard nothing from the leader of the opposition of substance on this matter. He should at least acknowledge the shameful part of the coalition's history and give a sincere apology to every single victim.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Hume.
Thank you, President. My question is to the Minister representing the Treasurer, Senator Gallagher. In April 2022, the Treasurer said that Australians were experiencing a triple whammy of skyrocketing costs of living, falling real wages and rising interest rates. That was April 2022. Isn't it true that since the Treasurer made this statement, the cost of living has risen even further, that interest rates are even higher and real wages have gone backwards faster?
Oh, sorry, Senator Hume, Minister.
Yeah, it did finish very abruptly. I was waiting for a bit more on that too. No, it's no criticism.
Order.
It's no.
Order.
It was no criticism.
Order. Order across the chamber. Order.
It was no.
Order.
It was no. Oh my goodness. It was.
Minister, please resume your seat. Order on my left. Order.
Minister, please continue.
Such sensitive souls. I didn't mean it as a criticism. It was just a surprise. Let's just say that. The Shadow Minister refers to comments made by the Treasurer in April 2022 when interest rates started going up under the former government, because that is the quarter where inflation was at its highest. Under the former government, just reminding you, Senator Hume, just reminding you that the largest increase, quarterly increase in inflation was under your government, and the Reserve Bank had to respond then and start lifting interest rates, which is what they have done. We on this side of the chamber accept that many thousands of Australians are doing it tough right now. We accept that, right, which is why our job has to be completely focused on the measures that we can take to make a meaningful difference in people's lives without adding to the inflation challenge in the economy. We accept that life is harder for people.
Minister, please resume your seat. Senator Hume.
Right. On relevance, President, I asked about cost of living rising further, interest rates being higher and real wages going backwards faster.
Thank you, Senator Hume. The Minister is being relevant. Please continue, Minister.
Thank you very much. And the Shadow Minister also asked me about wages, and I'm surprised. I'm surprised because those opposite who deliberately kept wages down fails to acknowledge all of the steps that we have taken to get wages moving. In an inflationary environment, I accept that, where we do see CPI higher than we'd like for longer than we'd like, and that's impacting on real wages. But we are determined to get real wages moving again, as you have seen from the aged care decision, as you've seen
Thank you, Minister.
Industrial relations
reform. First supplementary.
Thank you, President. Last week, Australians were delivered devastating news of another interest rate rise by the Reserve Bank. Rates are now at the highest that they've been since the Labor government was last in power in 2011. Inflation is growing faster than 15 members of the G20, and the ABS data shows that domestic inflation is growing faster than trade-exposed inflation. Minister, doesn't the data now show that Australia's rate of inflation is more of a Labor problem than a global problem?
Thank you very much, Senator Hume. Minister.
No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. Although it doesn't, and we are.
Order.
I don't think the Treasurer or I have made a secret of the fact that the inflation challenge is the biggest challenge that we are focusing on in the economy. It's staying higher than we would like for longer than we would like. And we are responding to that in the areas that the government has a job to do, which is, as I said, to roll out the cost of living relief measures, $23 billion that are being rolled out over the last two budgets. It's to get the budget in much better shape, which we have done, which you fail to recognise, through our savings measures. And in fact, that goes back to the last question I just answered. Remember, robo-debt was a budget savings measure. Where we find actual savings to return to budget, you hounded people who were living on income support payments to bolster your budget bottom line. That's
what you
did. Thank you,
Minister. The time for answering has expired. Senator Hume, second supplementary.
Thank you, President. Last week's analysis of OECD data in the Australian Financial Review shows that Australians have experienced the biggest fall in living standards of any advanced economy, and that this has happened in the last 12 months under Labor. Does the minister think that it is acceptable for Australians' real household incomes to have fallen faster than in any other advanced economy?
Thank you, Senator Hume. Minister.
What I don't think is acceptable is that those opposite have opposed every single cost of living measure that we have brought to this place to actually deal
Minister,
with some of those pressures
Minister,
that households are feeling.
Order on my right.
Senator Hume.
On relevance, President, I asked a very specific question about whether it was acceptable for real household incomes to have fallen faster than in any other advanced economy, and the Minister answered a completely different question.
Minister Wong?
Thank you, President. The Minister was asked for an opinion about what was acceptable, and I can understand why Senator Hume doesn't want House to remind
Minister,
her
Minister
about
Wong
what she voted against.
Order.
About
Thank
what
you.
She voted against. But
Thank
that
you.
Is relevant to the cost of living.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Birmingham.
President, on the point of order, previous rulings by past presidents have indicated that while glancing references to the positions of oppositions or previous governments may be relevant, ministers should not, when they are answering a question, go directly to the position of previous governments or the position of oppositions. This minister did, when she rose to her feet, went instantly, not to talking about the government, not to responding to Senator Hume's question, but instead to answering about the opposition.
Thank you,
the minister should be drawn to the question when she does that.
Thank you. Order. Order. The minister had just got to her feet. I will continue to listen carefully to her answer. Minister, please continue.
Thank you. And I think you can see from the decisions that we've taken as a government that we do believe that we needed to take decisions to address some of the cost of living pressures. That's my answer to the question. And so energy bill relief, cheaper childcare, more Medicare bulk billing, cheaper medicines, boosting income support payments, boosting the Commonwealth rental assistance, investing in skills through our fee-free TAFE policy, building more
Senator
affordable
Hume.
Homes, expanding parental leave, getting wages moving again. All
Minister,
of these things are in recognition.
Senator Hume.
again, on relevance, President. The question was about real household incomes. The Minister has not even mentioned the phrase real household incomes. Can I please ask you to direct the Minister to the question?
Senator Hume, the Minister is being relevant to the question. Minister, please continue.
Well, the point I make through announcing those list of measures is that through these decisions, the government acknowledges that we have a job and a responsibility to ease pressures on households where we can in light of the inflation challenge. That is precisely why our $23 billion cost of living package is so comprehensive, and I would remind those opposite again that they opposed most of it.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Sheldon.
My question is to the Minister for Emergency Management, Senator Watt. Last year, communities across Australia were devastated by floods. Some towns hit multiple times across a matter of months. My home state of New South Wales, the Central West region, experienced unprecedented flooding. The town of Yugara, the scale of the flooding was described as an inland tsunami. Minister, what is the Albanese government doing to support towns across the Central West to recover and build back stronger?
Senator Watt.
Thank you, President, and thank you, Senator Sheldon. Last year, communities in the central west of New South Wales experienced floods on a scale that had never been seen before. And Senator Sheldon is right, it was described by those who experienced it as an inland tsunami. Tomorrow, in fact, will be 1 year since the devastating flood that took lives and properties in Yugara and a number of other nearby communities. And I know that we'll all be thinking of residents of Yugara when tomorrow arrives. I travelled to some of these communities, as did Senator Sheldon and many others, in the days following the event, including Senator Davey, as I say, many others did, across politics, communities like Parks, Forbes, Yugara and many others. And it was clear to me, as I'm sure it was to others, that as we delivered short-term recovery support, more would need to be done for a longer-term strategy to improve flood resilience. And that's why I'm pleased that last week the Albanese government agreed to match funding announced by the Minns government in New South Wales to jointly deliver $100 million to the most flood-impacted parts of central west New South Wales. That funding will support repairs and replacements of roads, community halls and other infrastructure, sporting fields, parks and playgrounds, as well as legal aid assistance for flood victims. The funding also includes an in-principle commitment towards a $40 million resilient housing program, with details of the program to be agreed following consultation with the local community. The support we announced last week is on top of the $500 million the federal and New South Wales governments have jointly delivered to New South Wales, including areas within the Central West, which were impacted by those floods last year. The feedback received so far about last week's funding has been very positive, and people in the Central West are excited to see this support. Cabon Mayor Kevin Beattie told Triple M Central West that this was fantastic news and gives some people a bit of direction and a little bit of certainty about where they're heading in their recovery. We will continue to stand by these communities as they recover.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Sheldon, first supplementary.
I thank the Minister for the update. I'm sure all of us here pass on our condolences to all those families and community members affected on the year anniversary tomorrow. I note that the recovery is ongoing in nearly every state and territory across the country, including many regional and remote areas. Can the Minister please provide an update on how recovery is progressing in remote communities like the Fitzroy Crossing?
Thank you, Senator Sheldon. Minister Watt.
Thanks, President, and thanks, Senator Sheldon. I'm pleased to advise that the Albanese and Cook governments are continuing to support the flood-impacted communities in northern Western Australia. And this is an area I know people like Senator Stirl, Senator Lyons, Senator Dodson and Senator Pratt have taken a very and Senator Payman have taken a very big interest in since these events occurred. Alongside the state government, we've delivered a range of measures to help recovery efforts, including housing, mental health assistance, support for local farmers, small businesses and Aboriginal corporations, as well as grants for environment and heritage funding. As Senator Stirl observed just recently, I can confirm that the Fitzroy Crossing bridge reconstruction is well underway. The new bridge will be six times as strong, 100 metres longer, be two lanes wide and include a shared path for pedestrians and cyclists. 132 local jobs have been created, with around a quarter of total crew hours worked attributed to Aboriginal people, and around $11 million has been committed to Aboriginal-owned businesses in the area.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Sheldon, second supplementary.
Now, we know that increasing disaster risk is driving up insurance premiums in disaster-impacted communities. What is the Albanese government doing to reduce disaster risk, and put downward pressure on insurance premiums.
Thank you, Senator Sheldon. Minister Watt.
Thank you, Senator Sheldon. As I know you know well, disaster risk is the largest driver of insurance premium rises, along with the rising cost of reinsurance internationally. The Albanese government is committed to doing our bit to reduce the cost of living for all Australians, and that's why we're designing policies to put downward pressure on insurance premiums and get real results. Through our Disaster Ready Fund, which of course replaced the failed Emergency Response Fund from the opposition, which didn't build a single disaster mitigation project in the years that it existed. In contrast, we're investing up to $200 million each and every year through resilience and mitigation projects across Australia. Within the Disaster Ready Fund, we're co-funding $40 million towards the Queensland Household Resilience Program. Previous rounds of this program have seen more than a 13% drop in insurance premiums for Queenslanders who made their homes more resilient. Our $174 million joint commitment to the Bundaberg Flood Levy, not supported by the local National Party member, estimates reductions
you,
in
Minister
insurance
Watt.
Premiums
time
of $1,000 a year.
Senator Watt.
I ask that further questions be placed on notice.